I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Bill Donabedian. Bill is the founder of the Bunbury and Buckle Up Music Festivals. But Bill, you have quite the interesting and really intriguing background. It's fascinating to me. The last time you were our guest, you were the managing director of Fountain Square.
That's correct.
And you completely, in my mind, had a hand in transforming our city's urban core in terms of events and things that go on to the square.
Thank you. That's a lot of people involved in making that happen, but thank you very much.
There are a lot of people, but you were running the show when they first reopened Fountain Square. And you really got to that gig because you also co-founded the Midpoint Music Festival back in 2002.
And I think that's how my whole event business, I guess, got started because of that. And that was just because I was a local music who wanted to shine some light on our local music scene. And that's what got Midpoint started, and it's just been building on that ever since.
So now you're running these two music festivals currently. You said you were and are a musician. You're a drummer.
Yes.
So that's where all this love for music and entertainment and so forth come from.
Yeah, I've been playing music in one way, shape, or form since the fourth grade when I started taking piano lessons and took on drums in high school. I actually started college. I was a music major and switched to general business. So really, I just took my passion for music and my general business degree and put them together.
Well, this sounds really interesting. So the Bunbury Music Festival, which is July 11th through the 13th, the Buckle Up Music Festival is
the 18th through the 20th.
And you've got some amazing bands. I mean, people that I even know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alabama, Willie Nelson, the band. You know, I'm from West Virginia, just so you know.
Okay.
So these are really hitting home for me. Yeah. That's wonderful.
And Emmylou Harris. I mean, she's a legend too. We are so happy about this lineup. There aren't many country music festivals. And, you know, we told a lot of people in the industry we were going to do this. I think we've come out guns blazing here and surprised a lot of people.
Well, and the Buckle Up Festival was a good segue from Bunbury because you're able to use a lot of the same setup and stages. It's the following week.
Yes, it's a fantastic way to leverage that infrastructure. The most expensive thing is setting that all up and paying for renting it. But once you set it up, and a lot of rentals are monthly, it just makes a lot of economic sense.
So you've got the Bunbury Music Festival, then the Buckle Up Music Festival.
Yes.
And if people listening would like more information, because we've got folks listening from Lexington to West Virginia, how can they find that information?
Well, for Bunbury, it's the bunburyfestival.com, and Bunbury is spelled B-U-N-B-U-R-Y. And for the Buckle Up Festival, it's buckleupfestival.com.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you so much.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Bill Donabedian. Bill is the founder of Bunbury Music Festival, as well as the Buckle Up Music Festival, which is new this year. And Bill, how did you get your ideas for starting these festivals?
Honestly, it was right after doing Midpoint. I thought the next step for the city was to have the major summer music festival. But it only took me about 10 or 11 years to finally get there.
You took a little sideways stint through the city of Cincinnati, right?
Exactly.
Managing Fountain Square?
Exactly. So it just seemed like a natural progression.
Well, I know people have told me that they're amazed at not only what great music there is, but how well organized the festival is.
I think I pride myself on my organizational skills, project management skills, and the team that I have. Some of these people started with me at Midpoint and even at Fountain Square. And I'm drawn to people who are extremely proactive and well-organized.
And you're mentioning Midpoint Music Festival, and that's an event that you also founded several years ago.
Yes, that was in 2002. And then Sean, Riney, and I co-founded that event, and we sold it to City Beat in 2008.
In addition to it just being fun, let's talk about why these kinds of events, these music festivals, are such a huge deal in terms of economic impact for our city.
Well, it brings a lot of people into town. There's no question about it. I mean, we spend a lot of money anyways just producing the fest, and a lot of that money stays here in the greater Cincinnati area. But we have people from all over the United States and even Canada, the UK, Europe. We have people coming from all over.
So it's just an all-day festival. People can walk around from venue to venue, stage to stage, listen to all these different great bands.
Yeah, we have tons of activities, food, beer, pop, you name it.
And the dates are?
Well, Bunbury is the 11th through the 13th of July, and the following weekend, July 18th through the 20th, is Buckle Up.
So if folks listening would like to get information, understand a little bit more about how the logistics works, what's the website?
Bunburyfestival.com and buckleupfestival.com.
To anticipate, how many people attending this?
Bunbury, we'll probably see well over 60,000 people over those 3 days. Buckle Up, it's the first year. I'm expecting about 50,000. But to be honest, this is a huge country market, and it's being very well received. So it could be big.
Bill Donabedian. Bill is the founder of Bunbury Music Festival, as well as the Buckle Up Music Festival, which is new this year.
Well, thank you so much for everything you do for our community, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you for being our guest and for putting on great music shows for Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Tom, it just seems like yesterday tax time was over, but I think this is about the best time that people can start planning for their tax situation in 2014.
Well, it is a good time, and especially since it may still be fresh in your mind what happened with your 2013 return. If you got a substantial refund, that's great. I'm sure you were happy to get it, but that might not be the best use of your money, and you may want to consider adjusting your withholding if that situation is going to reoccur in 2014 and keeping some of that money currently or using it to fund a 401k contribution, you know, for example.
Why would we let the government keep our money? We may as well use our money. Certainly know that that money may be necessary in the future, but we don't want to let the government have an interest-free loan.
Why? Don't you think they'll use it wisely?
What do you think? Based on past history, no, not really. Alternatively, if you had to pay a big chunk when you owed your taxes in April, take a look at 2014 now. What do you need to do to minimize that? And what can you do? What strategies can you put in place today that will allow you to reduce your tax liability come next spring when you have to file?
And especially make sure that you're not going to be subject to any penalty because you'll be underpaid by too much. So you do need to do a projection of what your tax liability will be for 2014. If it looks like you're in the 15% tax bracket, there's one situation you can take advantage of called the zero capital gain rate, which is a great thing for people in that tax bracket. They can actually pay zero tax on their capital gains if they're in that 15% tax bracket.
It's a wonderful opportunity. And if you are in that situation, you should capitalize on it because it's been around now for just a couple of years. We don't know if it will last going forward. So certainly it's something that you want to take advantage of and plan to maximize that benefit if you can.
Well, and if you have a parent who may be living on limited income but have securities that have appreciated, it may be an opportunity for them to tweak their portfolio.
One of my clients, that happened to them this year, actually. We planned for it, but she was so thrilled and could not believe she didn't know a dime of income tax, even though she sold significant securities. So it can really be a huge benefit for people.
For Business Wise, I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Tom, there are a lot of new businesses popping up all over the place. People from consulting one-man operations to companies who are really significant who are starting out. And one question that we often get is, what type of accounting method should our business be on? And what that's referring to is generally the cash method of accounting or the accrual method of accounting. And primarily, you make that choice for tax reasons.
Well, that's right. Some people make the choice because of simplicity. And for simplicity reasons, cash is the easiest because you just account for cash as it comes in the door and you account for expenses of cash as you make payments.
And most individuals are on the cash method. I mean, when we file our tax returns, it's the amount of money that we bring in within a calendar year that we're taxed on, the expenses that we actually pay that we get to deduct. Not a pledge for a contribution. It's what was actually paid or charged to a credit card.
Right. Now, for financial statement purposes and to really measure the performance of your business, it's better to use the accrual basis method of accounting. And that's what accountants would advise you to do for internal purposes. But for tax purposes, The cash method often works better, and one reason it does is because you can manipulate the income, manipulate it legitimately so that you can end up with the amount of income you want at the end of the year by managing your cash.
Yeah, I think managing your cash is a better word, but you know, I love that conversation because it's like having your cake and eating it too, so you can have the best of both worlds. You can keep your financial statements for reporting purposes, like to the bank or to some of your suppliers on the accrual method. But then when it comes to preparing your tax return and how much money you have to pay, you can use the cash method. And that generally is a huge advantage if you are growing your business. So as you grow from start to however large, as your receivables grow, the cash method typically is going to be the most advantageous. Now, having said that, there's certain limits on who can use the cash method and the types of businesses that are eligible for the cash method. So it's not a blanket, you can use the cash method or not. You really have to take the time. It really makes sense to get professional advice from folks who know about these matters and these situations, professional advice, so that you can utilize either the cash method of accounting or the accrual method of accounting, or both, whatever suits your circumstances. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guests today are Joe Craven and Mary Gertner. Joe is the executive director for Girls on the Run, and Mary is its program director. And ladies, it's exciting. You've just had your 10th annual Girls on the Run race on May the 10th. How many participants?
So we had 3,600 total participants. And the amazing thing is that 1,300 of those were local girls in grades 3rd through 8 running their first 5K.
Well, I know our marketing director, Ellen Weyer, and her daughter were participating in that too. And she was so excited. It was just so wonderful for them to be able to do something like that together. Do you have a lot of mother, daughter, sister, sister type of thing?
Absolutely. So every girl is paired with a running buddy. So typically the running buddy is someone that's meaningful in the girl's life. It can be a mother, a father, an older sibling, a grandparent, maybe even one of their coaches. Sometimes the coaches will be running buddies as well.
So you mentioned coaches, and these are volunteers that really pull this off for you, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. And Mary certainly handles all of those programming things and really does an amazing job of recruiting coaches and schools for us.
So. Mary, how many different teams did you have?
This season we had 104 teams and over 500 volunteer coaches who implemented the program at their sites twice a week for 12 weeks.
So the program is not just about sprinting and teaching girls to run. It's much more in depth than that, isn't it?
That's correct. It's a complete empowerment and confidence building program. Girls talk about topics like standing up to peer pressure, not gossiping, healthy eating, community service while they train for a 5K. And then the 5K is the culminating event for their season.
Well, I love this because it really teaches girls, really children, but in this case it's girls, at a very young age that you have to work and set goals and work harder and achieve your goals. It's not something that's going to result in instant gratification.
Right. They have 12 weeks to work and set a big goal. And a lot of them at the time that they start don't even know what a 5K is, let alone how they're going to run it. So they work and chip away at it week by week and build up. And then they get to cross the finish line and see the fruits of their labor.
So if folks listening would like to learn more about Girls on the Run, because the event you had in May was only one of two, correct?
Yes, we do 2 5Ks a year. So there's one. Our next one will be November 15th. And that will be sort of the end of our 10th year celebration. The girls will also start a new season in the fall then. So the November 15th event will be their culminating activity.
So if you would like to learn how to become a volunteer, if you would like to participate in the program, if you're a mother or even a young girl listening right now would like to learn more, what is your contact information?
They should check out our website, GOTR, that's the initials of Girls on the Run, so GOTRCincinnati.org, and we have information for signing up to be a volunteer coach, for participating as a school, and for getting their daughters involved.
Well, thank you both very much, and thank you for listening to BusinessWise. This is Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guests today are Joe Craven, the executive director of Girls on the Run, and Mary Gertner, who is the program manager. And ladies, the Girls on the Run 5K races occur in May and November of each year, but there's a whole lot more that goes on in between that really make a huge impact on young girls. Can you talk about Girls on the Run, how it got started, and what its goals and objectives are?
Girls on the Run's mission is to inspire girls to be joyful, healthy, and confident using a fun, experience-based curriculum which creatively integrates running. So basically, they're going through a series of character-building lessons while also training for a 5K.
So they're becoming mentally, emotionally, and physically more empowered.
Yes, yeah, so the curriculum is developed on a whole person concept. So it does. It addresses all of those areas that you just mentioned.
You know, when you physically feel better, when you feel like you're able to accomplish something that maybe you never in your wildest dreams thought you could, it's very empowering, not just for that particular event. It spills over in so many other things in life.
And we do hear that from some of our older girls, our alumni, you know, that they will say, you know, once I ran that 5K, I knew I could do anything. And that many times they reach back and channel sort of that determination and that goal setting that they used when they were training for Girls on the Run.
Mary, didn't I see on TV or in the newspaper a story about a young girl who had had some disease and actually participated and was able to gain a lot more confidence?
Yeah, one of our girls this season actually had an autoimmune condition, which she was fairly sedentary prior to joining Girls on the Run. And because we gradually build up their exercise level, she was able to kind of do what she could do on a weekly basis and ended up completing our 5K. So she can really take that experience that she's had with her into every other area of her life.
If folks listening would like to participate, there are lots of options, aren't there? Maybe you can share some ways that they can help.
Yes. So our biggest need is volunteer coaches. So we had 500 volunteer coaches this season that made the program happen. That's a twice a week for 12-week commitment. So we know that that's not for everybody, but we do have a lot of teachers and parents and community members who help us make that happen. Another big need that we have is for our volunteer soulmates. So soulmates is our charity running leg of the organization, and they help us to bring in dollars that provide scholarships for our local girls to participate. Families pay on a sliding scale according to their family income, and about 50% of the girls need to be subsidized by our scholarship dollars.
So you're really changing people's lives in so many different ways if you're helping with this program, Girls on the Run. If folks listening would like to reach out to you, learn more about the program, what is your contact information?
So if folks in the area would like to volunteer with Girls on the Run, they can call our office at 513-321-1056 or reach out via our website, which is GOTR, stands for Girls on the Run, so GOTRCincinnati.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Thane Maynard. Thane is the director of the Cincinnati Zoo. Thane has been an author of a number of books, as well as a frequent guest on local and national radio and television programs. And Thane, I guess one question I'd like to ask, you've been at the zoo for a long time. What's your favorite part of your job?
You know, that's a good question because people think of, oh gosh, if you're working at the zoo, you get to work with animals. And I do love animals, no doubt about it. In fact, ironically, the Florida alligator is my favorite animal. And it's because I grew up in Florida back when they were endangered. If there were as many gators then as there are now, I wouldn't have made it because they've made a comeback, I'll tell you. But actually, when you're running any business, you're much more in the people business than you are in the animal business. So I enjoy that part as well. My favorite is probably going out on the zoo grounds, which I try to do every afternoon, and interact with our visitors, get a sense of what they're enjoying. Our goal at the zoo is to inspire every visitor with wildlife every day. We want the zoo to really be an inspiring place, not just a passive place. So I try to get a sense of, you know, what are people really stopping, looking at, paying attention to? And sometimes you'd be surprised. It's not always our biggest, fanciest exhibits. So sure, people love elephants, people love tigers, but folks will also stop sometimes for a half an hour and watch the antics of our snow monkeys. I think one reason is because they live in a group and there's the parents who are a little more sedate and then they're the youngsters and then the younger ones are chasing the older ones and somebody ends up flying into the water. And I think it reminds many people of their own families. But it's fun to see that interaction among families and try to get a sense of why is it that people come to the zoo. When I was younger, I thought, oh, well, you know, people come to the zoo because we're so involved with conservation. We're going to save the Sumatran rhino and they really care. In reality, we do lots of surveys of our customers on this. Folks come because they want the day out with their family, spend some quality time together in a pretty place. And naturally, because we have animals, that's a real draw for kids and such. But mostly the driver is family spending time together. So I'm glad we have a great place that people enjoy.
Well, Thane, if people want more information about the zoo and particularly about events that are going on at a particular point in time, What's the zoo website?
Sure, cincinnatizoo.org. And there you can find everything from prices to hours to all sorts of ways you can get involved with the zoo. We're very proud to be known as the greenest zoo in America. That's on saving water and saving energy. But also there's good role models of things you can do at home. Everybody wants to save money. And at our house, it's gotten to be hilarious because all the things I used to tell my kids, like turn the lights off, don't waste the water. Now it's hip. I was a visionary, Tom.
Do your kids know it?
I don't think so.
Well, Thane, thanks for that great information.
You
for
bet.
Business Wise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guest today is Mark Hammond. Mark is a mortgage loan officer with Union Savings Bank. And Mark, in my business as a CPA, I'm all about planning and proactivity and really having a plan for where you want to be. Same thing goes when you're buying a home. You just can't walk out the door typically and go sign a contract. There's a lot more that goes into it, especially if you're looking to borrow money to pay for the home.
That is correct, Crystal. We have people that come to see us and they already have a contract, and you almost want to say, where have you been for the last couple of months? But the best buyers are the people that get pre-qualified ahead of time. We're able to talk to them about their credit, their income, and their debts. These are the folks that we can really help from day one.
So just to give folks some information about what someone like you, a mortgage loan officer, would be looking for in advance of their determining how much and what type of loan that they're qualified for, what are some basics that people need to know?
We need to discuss with them their current debts. A lot of folks are coming into us with student loans that are deferred, and we need to put a payment on those deferred payments. We also need to know about their car payments, their credit cards, and their credit history. Credit history is very important when you go to buy a house.
So instead of going to find the home, having contract in hand, then come to the bank, it really makes a lot of sense to go get your ducks in a row first, maybe months or even a year or so in advance to when you really want to buy the home. Because if you can increase your credit score, let's just say you have some blemishes that you aren't even knowledgeable about. If you can increase your credit score, that can really save you a lot of money in terms of interest rates as well.
It can save you money on interest rate and closing costs. So credit score is a key factor when you're buying a house.
And you just can't fix a credit score immediately, correct?
It takes some time. It takes time, but it can be fixed. You can get your credit score fixed.
So from what I'm hearing, Mark, it makes a lot of sense for potential home buyers to meet with mortgage loan officers so they understand very clearly where they stand and what they need to do to help themselves to qualify for a better loan, a better interest rate, so they can have the home of their dreams.
That's correct. And there's all kinds of programs out there for first-time buyers. So not only is the credit important, but the programs that are they're changing all the time. So it's good to sit down with a mortgage loan professional and get all your ideas straight.
Mark, if folks listening would like to reach out to you, get more information, what is your contact information?
My contact information is area code 513-300-5835. That's my cell phone. Feel free to call or text me at that number.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guest today is Kevin Airy. Kevin is the president of Franklin Financial Group. Kevin, you've been in the mortgage brokerage industry for a long time. I know you've been very successful. You survived through the heyday, and you know it's because I think you really do put your client first. But if someone's purchasing a home today, and they're required to have a certain amount of money for a down payment, but they just don't have it, is there anything that they can do just besides waiting until they save the required funds?
Well, one way that they can circumvent that is lenders allow for gift funds to be given to borrowers. I don't think the issue goes away that the lenders want some money in the game, some skin in the game, if you will. But those borrowers, if they don't have the money now, they're allowed to get a gift from a relative or someone with a familial type relationship to them that is provable. That can be in the form of money that does not have to be repaid. It truly needs to be a gift. Part of the problem that lenders didn't focus on enough in the past that caused or led to some of the foreclosure problems were that borrowers were getting funds to put as a down payment, which was really borrowed money that had a payment that was never disclosed, which really, had it been known, might have disqualified someone from purchasing a home. But since the lender who gave them the loan never knew about that undisclosed payment. They let it go through, and the person ended up not being able to afford the home.
Well, what other things should people think about? For example, cash flow, the amount of cash that's coming in your home every month. Is there a certain threshold? Is there some kind of a formula or
criteria ratios?
Yeah, criteria. Yeah.
We call them debt-to-income ratios, I believe is what you're asking about. And really, the published, for a conventional loan, the published ratio is you do not want the house payment, including taxes, insurance, homeowners association dues, any of that stuff that's directly related to the house payment. The guideline is you do not want that to go over 28% of your total gross monthly income. And then that house payment, along with your other monthly bills, should not be greater than 36% of your total gross monthly income.
You're talking about gross, not net. Net's
correct.
After tax. So.
Correct. And those guidelines aren't set in stone. I've seen loans approved up to 50% of someone's gross monthly income, which is getting a little interesting because we know that that's not all the money they're bringing home.
Right.
So there's not a lot left on the table when you get onto those higher
percentages. Certainly the taxes coming out of there are most likely at least a third of the gross.
Correct.
As well. So
yeah.
That cuts your net pay down pretty close.
Yeah.
So Kevin, if folks listening would like more information about Franklin Financial Group, what is your contact information?
They can find me on the web at www.goffg.com or at 513-231-4927.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Kevin Airy. Kevin is the president of Franklin Financial Group. It's a mortgage brokerage company. And Kevin, you help people find loans and rates on loans. We commonly hear about FHA loans and VA loans and conventional loans, which is very confusing to me. There are many types of loans out there. How do consumers know which one is the best for them?
Well, when working with your mortgage originator like myself, we can determine which programs you qualify for. And often, someone may qualify for both a conventional loan or an FHA loan or a VA loan. Actually, I've had people that were veterans qualify for all three at the same time. So it's a matter of determining which ones they qualify for, and then based on all the different rate options and program options, which program ends up being the one that best meets the borrower's needs.
So certainly it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's very specific to the individual borrower.
Yeah, I think so. And then there are other loans that, like the USDA Rural Development Loan for developing some areas further outside the metropolitan area. That's not something that's used so much, especially with us who kind of live here locally in town. You have to get, you know, relatively outside of, let's say, the interstate areas to some areas where the property itself qualifies based on the Department of Agriculture's map.
So let's just say someone listening who does live in an outlying area, because this signal goes a long way, would they be able to work through a mortgage broker here in Cincinnati to get a rate?
Absolutely. My company can do those. Other companies, quite honestly, can do them as well. They just have to have access to, in this case, that USDA Rural Housing Program. And as long as the property qualifies, there are some borrower eligibility issues, such as income restrictions that they have to meet. But if the property and the borrower are both eligible, sure, they can definitely look to maybe buy a home that they thought they couldn't afford.
It's another alternative.
It is.
And obviously, a lot of people can't qualify for that. So if you can, it may make sense to check that out and take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
Kevin, if folks listening would like to learn more about that USDA program or any other issue regarding mortgage loans, how can they reach you?
They can find me on the web at www.goffg.com or at 513-231-4927.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate.